Welcome back to Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps, and our guest this week is a comedian doing very well in the UK comedy scene, even in lockdown, partly thanks to Gigless, a weekly Zoom show hosted by Catherine Bohart that he helps run and is a regular act in. He's been described as a laugh a minute, but isn't entirely sure that's a compliment, and his name is Andrew White.
Hello. Yeah, laugh a minute is great in an hour, maybe, but in a 5 minute set, that's not a great fulfillment of my duties.
I was trying to think, actually, what is the equivalent of that for me? And I was like, maybe it's people saying, sometimes his podcast makes sense. Some of the sentences he says are coherent. So, yeah, I hear what you say. Do you tend to find that you are okay at taking, like, I'm not sure about that one either, but like genuine compliments, are you generally okay at taking them?
I think I am. I mean, obviously, there's a certain level of, if somebody's really gushing, it's a bit awkward. It's just, I can't, it's always arrogant to accept this much praise, but I think I'm okay with little compliments. I've got used to being polite and appreciative.
Yeah, because I've realised over the years that because one of the love languages I like to receive is words of affirmation, often the ones you like to receive are the same ones you give. And I've dated a lot of people that are not good at taking compliments. And it's okay up to a point, but at a certain point when they're really convinced they're not attractive or funny or whatever I'm saying to them, then I'm sort of like, what conspiracy do you think this is where I'm just pretending to like you?
Yeah, it's like, also, do you not trust my judgment?
Yeah, that's where I can actually start getting a bit offended. Like, I've had that actually before with friends who have, like, been dealing with confidence issues and I don't know how to support them at times. And sometimes it literally gets to a point of like, okay, look, if I'm telling you you're a good friend and you're telling me you're not, you're questioning my judgment. Do you think all my other friends are shit? And they're like, no, no, okay, I'm a good friend. Thank you.
Yeah.
So do you have a dating story to start us off?
Yeah, so I don't know whether it's a modern thing or a gay thing or a modern gay thing, but I feel like actual dates are very rare. Obviously, the apps and stuff and hookup culture is all over the place. But in terms of actually going on dates, I've only been on a couple with a lovely, lovely guy in Salisbury. And it was, I didn't really know how to act. It was a little bit awkward. Obviously, the responsibility on me to be engaging as well, but he wasn't brilliant. Much to the table, but it was really annoying because on the Tinder chat it was very flowing and stuff. So I ordered a seafood cannelloni, which it was okay. It was a fine meal. Turns out I didn't know what cannelloni was. I thought it was something different. But the main issue was I went back through our Tinder chats afterwards and I realized that we'd had a massive conversation about how we both hated seafood and just hated fish and all that sort of stuff. And I just like massively outed myself as an appeasing liar very early doors. I don't know whether that was the reason. I suppose that's the first kind of hurdle in a bad, well, not a few more dates, but yeah, it just kind of led to nothing.
And were there other hurdles you identified then?
Mostly just kind of like just not connecting. I just didn't feel very connected. It wasn't like a friendship first. I suppose that's what I really want from dating. I think that's what a lot of people want, but it's very hard to have that kind of natural. We're great friends and, oh, hey, let's be lifetime lovers as well for the sake of ease. But unfortunately, a lot of my friends don't see eye to eye or indeed share my sexuality. So it's settled for boring men who I lie to about seafood.
I mean, it's an interesting lie, but I think people do get pulled in on that. One I've definitely tripped up on is pretending to know when you ask somebody what kind of music they're into, and they often like pick the most obscure or cool sounding thing they can think of, and then I just pretend to have heard about it because I would rather do that and quickly Google them than I would buy into this like, oh, now they've got some weird like superiority they've created, whereas actually they probably just listen to ABBA in reality. And that works up until you're then on a date with them and you can't fake knowing their references anymore.
See, I'd go the other way with that normally. If someone's like, oh, I like this film and I've not heard it, I used to just pretend I'd do the exact same. But I've switched now into just being honest that I don't know it and then like getting them to tell me about it, because because it's like, well, their favorite film, they're going to love talking about it. And if there's one, I think, unfortunate truth about the human psyche is that people just love talking about themselves. So if you say, oh, what is that? They'll almost kind of connect with you more because you've given them an opportunity to just wax lyrical about their favorite thing.
Okay, I think that's where you get your first point, because you've convinced me that is the grown-up way to approach it. I mean, I don't always do the pretending thing, but I think it's mostly I've got a problem with when I just think people are being sort of pedantic with their answers for no reason. Mm. Certainly app culture seems to lead me to match with a lot of people that are very interesting in type and they're not so much in reality, and maybe it's that it's easier to fake that.
That's so true. It's so much easier to give a bit of thought to what you're saying, and as you say, google some answers as well, and kind of be a bit more daring. And then in real life it just falls apart.
Yeah, and what's your experience been like generally app dating, and which ones do you use?
So in terms of like with regularity, Tinder is the thing that I have downloaded at the moment. And Grindr's kind of more anything from an hour to a couple of days, spates of shame, shall we say. Because it's not an app for romance or for meeting somebody, really. As much as I try, and the thing is, I hear so many stories about gay couples that have met on Grindr that I keep going back to it like, oh no, maybe there will be someone. But ultimately, it is just a hookup app and 50-year-old men offering me money and stuff like that.
I didn't know people were offering money on there. Yeah. Have you ever considered it?
I never in seriousness, but I have given more than a moment's pause when somebody's been like, just come over for this period of time for like 600 quid. And it's like, that is a lot of money. I wouldn't, but you obviously used to think about it. I'm not going to lie and say I don't consider it, but I would never do it.
I do find this stuff interesting, like how far removed people are from, you know, what level of consideration they would undertake. And I think I am a lot more open to sex work than a lot of people I know. Like, I'm not actively looking to pursue it, but I think it wouldn't take much, put it that way. And one of my few regrets in life, because I try not to have any, was one time I was walking literally around the corner from my house. There's this like cursed intersection where I seem to have weird experiences, and yet I keep going past it. It's the quickest route, okay? And a car pulled up, like a red kind of battered car, and this guy sort of half like leaned, you know, classic like asking for directions. So he asked me where the like gay district is in Birmingham, and I know, but I do not know how to get there, and I also don't drive, and I've not been, so I was not a good person to give him directions. And so I sort of vaguely said, it's the other side of the city, but you can't really drive through it, which is not very helpful. And then he asked me if I was gay, and I'm not. Some of the people I date are men, but it was the kind of a weird question. So I was like, we're not going to go into that. The answer to his specific question is no. Then he asked me like if I wanted to get in the car with him and like we could go for a drive, or I could like help him find this area and there might be something in it for me. And I don't exactly know how I read this from the situation, but it was sort of clear to me that the thing was money. And it was the middle of the day. This was a lot of information coming at me. And so I was just sort of very much like, oh, okay, bye, or whatever. And just sort of backed away, not knowing what to say. Like, hope you find it. And so the one of my few regrets is I wish I'd asked how much. Like, I would have loved to know the price. I also would have quite liked to know, did he decide I was a sex worker or that he could convince me? What did I look more like?
Are you asking me whether I think you look like...
No, but sure. Let's.
I mean, from the story, I would guess that he was just trying to... I think particularly men, because they think that other men have a similar level of horniness / penis thinking, by which I mean, you know, thinking with your penis. I think they could probably have much more confidence in convincing somebody. So I'd say it was convincing rather than thinking you were. He was just the luckiest guy in the world looking for gay sex, and the first person he's come across is a gay escort. I think it was more likely that he thought he could convince you.
Not that I would mind at all if someone thought that. It was more a question of, like, have I found a corner that I didn't know? Like, is there something by my house I wasn't aware of? But yeah, there you go. Thank you for giving me an excuse to tell that weird story. There's many more that have happened at that intersection. So you've not had any experiences like that, but you have had people offering money on apps. What other kind of behaviours do you come across on Grindr?
Again, it's quite often it's very expectation based. They kind of, a lot of people think they're owed a certain level of respect or information from you, which I can understand on Tinder because, you know, there's a clear sort of narrative, I guess, of, well, you know, you're putting yourself out there. So you should at least put your name and your photos and maybe a bit about yourself, or because it is a bit annoying when you come across somebody who's got like a blank bio, like, what are you on here for? Obviously, you're trying to sell yourself. But on Grindr, there's not the same rules. So I think expecting somebody to be forthcoming with every single detail about their life or their sexual preferences or even just, you know, pictures. Just a lot of people are very expecting to be like, send a picture of this, send a picture of that. I think, yeah, a lot of... So I'm 21 and it's like 40-year-old, 50-year-old men messaging me. And yeah, I don't know why they think that they can convince slash win me over.
I don't know why I'm so cute. It's so difficult. But it is weird, that age gap, because I am quite a subscriber to like age shouldn't matter. But also there can still be questions within that of like, if you're seeing a trend like that, what is going on here and what kind of dynamic are they looking for? And, you know, there definitely is a sort of power dynamic that can exist when there's a big age gap. And I think that's the thing that would... Yeah. Maybe make me more uncomfortable.
Exactly. Yeah, I've got nothing against age gap relationships. And as you say, it's all about the individual dynamics. But I think especially with gay dating, because it's a smaller section of society, and it can be quite scary and lonely if you're a young gay person kind of discovering yourself and you've not got maybe a network of other fellow LGBT people, and your only option is those apps, then those men are 100% predatory. They're kind of exploiting a younger person who's just discovering themselves. And I think there's a lot of that sort of stuff in gay culture that I would like to see fixed at some point, but unfortunately that is the state of play at the moment.
Yeah, that sounds really tough. I can understand from what you're describing why Tinder is one you're more open to, and I've certainly heard those kind of like stereotypes between those apps, which is interesting because I think within straight people, Tinder is the one that most gets that stereotype of being the hookup one, and yet it's like a completely different ball game.
Yeah, I don't even know how... I know there's Bumble and stuff. I don't even know if they cater for same-sex relationships.
Genuinely, they do, yes. But part of the appeal of Bumble is that it was set up to help women get less kind of aggressive messages and sort of manipulative first messages, which is a big problem, and just kind of general harassment. And so with that, the woman has to message first when you match, which then if you're same sex, there's not that rule. So with that in mind, I don't quite know what the appeal would maybe be as much, if that's what the app is pitched as. Yeah, but it's interesting how they kind of get these different perceptions. Like, I hear from my friends that, particularly women, that Bumble is the one that the feminist men go for, and then also the ones that are pretending. And it sort of like somewhat balances it out, unfortunately, where it's like the ones that kind of see something like Bumble as a challenge of like, I'm going to pretend to be nice to her so I can harass her later, which, yeah, yuck.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, yeah, extra yuck. Because if you're pretending, you know what you're doing more. Not that somebody who's so brazen doesn't know what they're doing or shouldn't know better, but there's an extra level of maliciousness to exploit kind of trustworthy spaces and ideas.
Yeah, I think they're like the version of it that I come across is when sometimes I meet men like in a friendship scenario and they have a certain kind of way they are towards women that really contrasts with how they are towards like their sister or their mom. Like, the more extreme that contrast is, the more I'm like, oh, I don't know if I trust your integrity, because it seems to be the ones that really aren't great to women are most clued into why they don't want their sister dating, like, ever. doesn't seem so. What, you do whatever you want and she stays single forever? This seems, no, I don't like that.
Well, it's like this, Sean, is his name Sean Bailey, the London mayoral candidate? He came under a lot of fire recently for saying, oh, as a father and a husband, I'm appalled. And it's like people were just saying, well, you shouldn't have that classification. My friend Joe Wells, who's a very funny comedian, he tweeted, I'm a husband, but not a father. So I only half understand why misogyny is bad. It's like you shouldn't need those personal relationships to understand how women should be treated, and just basic respect.
Yeah, and unfortunately, it's no proof of anything that you can be nice to two individuals that you are nice to anybody else. I'm like, you know, you would actually struggle to find many people that aren't nice to at least two people they've ever met.
It's a scary, I really feel for women at the moment, just, well, not just at the moment, but throughout all of history, but especially at the moment, there just seems like so much more, what's the word, sort of masquerading and sort of trickery almost that you have to kind of go through. There's an extra level of filtering that you have to do.
It's a really tough situation. And with what happened with Sarah Everard and the conversations around that, it does bring up a lot of important conversations. And also it brings out a lot of bigotry. It brings out a lot of people saying problematic shit and trying to discredit, you know, the genuine experiences of women. And on one hand, as a man who tries to do and know better, I can look at that and be like, okay, well, you know, some of the bigots are showing themselves, and this is an opportunity to educate and to challenge these things. In the same way, I think a lot more people know now why the All Lives Matter stuff doesn't make sense, because we had so much opportunity last year to have those conversations. And it's like, as an outsider to it, as a white man, that can seem productive. But like you say, for the women or the people of colour experiencing these things, it's just like a dredging up of trauma.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And yeah, it's not nice. And I just hope so much that good does come from it, even if it's just bits and bobs that slowly grow. I've seen it a little bit, I was kind of putting a positive note, in the comedy industry, women do feel like they'll be supported when they call out a creepy guy. There's a much more openness, I feel. And I think there's a lot more promoters who are going out of their way to create safer spaces for women in whatever way they can. I know a lot of people have been, so there's a system in comedy, especially at open mics, called a bringer or a stayer. So a bringer means you have to bring some of the audience yourself, so you have to bring at least one other person. And a stayer means you have to stay for the whole night, because effectively you're not just an act, you're also part of the audience. Basically, it's techniques used by promoters that can't get an audience. And it was critical anyway, because obviously it proves that you're not very good at promoting an event if you have to use these tactics. But that's been extra criticised and banned from a lot of forums, because if you have to stay for the whole night as a woman, it could mean getting a really late night bus home, or walking alone in the dark, anything like that. So the fact that that's kind of being moved towards banning is just a very small positive, and I hope for the future, I hope.
Wow, I actually didn't know about that. I knew about bringer shows. I didn't know there could be a staying clause. That's so strange to me. Particularly because you're an act. I'd be like, am I getting paid to sit in the show? Like, do you want a review? Like, I'm a professional. What am I here for?
It's so stupid. And the people that run it, they think their night is everything. They think just because they're giving you stage time is that they're some sort of like comedy god, kind of born out of arrogance, I think. It's slowly being stamped out.
Good. So to swing back to talking about relationships, you've had the year of going in and out of lockdowns and pandemic measures. How is this giving you a chance to think about what you're looking for next in a relationship? Or do you even have so much as like an ideal guy in your mind?
That's a great question. I think I've definitely had much more time to think and reflect on what I want. And I don't want that hookup culture that is so kind of forced onto a lot of gay people. It's almost sort of like the only option sometimes. So I don't want that. And I don't need that. I don't feel compelled to go towards that. So I think I feel much more patient than I did maybe at the start of lockdown. I feel much more willing to wait for whatever. Yeah, I don't know if I have an ideal man in mind, but I definitely am much more willing to wait for that to come up now.
Nice. And I'm interested there in what you said about this kind of hookup culture being put on gay men. So I know there's things around like the prevalence of potentially those options and behavior being very widespread and normalized, which in some ways sounds pretty cool that it's like, you know, sex positive and is, you know, hopefully getting to a far opposite of the like historic shame that's existed within the gay community that still a lot of it unfortunately still can come through.
Yeah.
Does that also mean you find trouble getting people that are looking to commit to something more? Is that an issue as well?
Yeah, I mean, I've not put myself out there massively, so I've not personally experienced it much, but I definitely do see it a lot. Kind of people almost, I know this is so stupid, but it's like, you know, just to have sex is, some people almost view it as like, well, it's just sex. Of course, I'm justified in having sex, but to have a relationship, that's like, that's pretty gay. So, which I know sounds stupid, but you know, that extra level of committing to a relationship is almost a further barrier for some people's internalized homophobia. We grow up in a society where through porn and TV and whatever, sex is almost expected. So to have a hookup is fine, but yeah, to get actually having to a loving, committed relationship is almost too far for some people. Again, not everyone, of course, it's just a minority, but you see it enough to notice that that's some sort of pattern. So yeah, it can be hard to look for somebody that just wants a nice relationship and isn't just interested in their own personal pleasure.
Wow, I wasn't even aware of that kind of mentality. And it's odd for me to think about because it almost feels like the opposite of, you know, the kind of things I remember like from like right from school where there was sort of, you know, a lot of, I'm sure unfortunately it probably still happens, but a lot of people being told they were acting gay and this kind of like effort to cement that as being something lesser. And I remember even as a young person being like, this makes no sense. Surely acting gay isn't about, you know, having a best mate or whatever like ludicrous thing that apparently is acting gay. I'm like, is it not doing sexual acts with another man? I'm like, is sucking dick not the thing that is acting gay? So that's interesting to hear this perspective on it, where it's like kind of flipped, where it's like, no, I'll do the physical stuff, but getting into a relationship, that's too gay.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think we're a very sexually liberated society, you know. People are kind of, experimentation and finding out what you like in the bedroom is very much encouraged, which, so, you know, it's fine to have a gay experience. But I know people, I've hooked up with people who still say they're straight, even, and you know, I'm not going to define their sexuality, but from the conversations we've had, it just kind of sounds a lot like they maybe would want to be more open in their personal lives as well. But you know, because it's fine to have a hookup in the bedroom, but to actually be out and in a loving relationship is, which is sad, almost a step too far.
Ooh, interesting. Okay, you're getting some points there because you're getting me to realise some things, because I have definitely been in that experience where I have had relationships with people that, you know, on both sides. I had an ex that continued to identify as a lesbian throughout our relationship and indeed still does. And I'm sort of very cautious of ever trying to label anyone else. I think it's such a, you know, a personal thing, but I've definitely told stories of male exes or, you know, friends that I've had intimate relations with where friends have like raised an eyebrow of like, and they call themselves straight. So maybe I would come across more of that stuff if I was someone that was kind of more relationship committed, because I think something I've realized, so I've been reading a lot about attachment styles and I have an avoidant attachment style, and so I like being in long-term things with people, but I can sometimes find levels of commitment feel a bit suffocating or like a threat to my independence, and that's something that personally and through my work I value very highly. And so I don't have a problem with commitment, but I generally am not the one pushing for it. And so I wonder if maybe that's part of why I've not come across what you're describing as much, because if I'm with someone that's kind of exploring their sexuality and identifies as straight, then they're not maybe pushing for commitment and neither am I. And so that sort of dynamic has space to breathe and exist.
So you're saying that because you've not been too commitment focused, you've not necessarily experienced that same thing?
That's what I'm wondering, and I'm not, we'll see how this sounds when I listen back to the edit, because I'm trying to figure this stuff out in real time. But yeah, I wonder, because I'm generally not the one pushing for more commitment in relationships, then somebody having a sexuality label that wouldn't necessarily fit can exist a bit easier.
Yeah, it's difficult with labels because they are very useful. They're useful for yourself to kind of like give yourself a structure in life and a community as well. Because, you know, if you say, well, I'm a gay man, then you can find other gay people. You can connect with gay culture and stuff like that. But there's no universal definition of every label. Like, I would say I'm gay, but I'm definitely not 100% gay. And I do, you know, occasionally find myself attracted to, admittedly still quite masculine looking women. So there's obviously kind of I've got a certain attraction to gender presentation, but I'd still say I'm gay, even though I do find myself in very rare occasions attracted to certain types of women, just because it's easier, and that is predominantly how I live my life. And I feel quite lucky in that label doesn't mean much to me, but I think for a lot of people it does. And to kind of betray that label or to relabel yourself almost feels like an entire reinvention. And so if a straight guy is, you know, enjoying gay relationship or gay sex or whatever, to redefine yourself publicly anyway, not that you have to, but there's an expectation to, can be quite a lot and be quite daunting. So I totally understand why somebody might not want to, but I think that's maybe a failing of how we discuss all of this.
Yeah, I think it has also been said that because I don't have a set sexuality label, that might be part of the reason why I find myself in kind of vague situationships sometimes. It's a weird thing to try and wrap my brain around because I don't really know any different, you know, like this is just how I am and how I see the world. But the worry of that, I guess, the thing that does play on my mind sometimes is, am I some sort of like get out of jail free card? Like, you can have a experience with me and explore your sexuality, or even maybe just what kind type of relationship you might be interested in. I'm currently feeling quite open to dating couples, for example. And so, you know, I wonder sometimes with this openness and not having a set label, if that means that sometimes people see me as not counting to the same degree of, oh, well, this doesn't make me gay because he doesn't identify as gay.
Mm. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think, yeah, a lot of people do think like that. And I would personally say wrongly, because even if you were just like, if you said, for example, oh, I am 100% gay man, that doesn't change that person's experience. That doesn't change what they thought of it. So yeah, that's interesting that people are using your sort of floating voter status to... Sorry, that makes it sound like you'll eventually settle on one. I didn't mean that. But you know,
no,
what I mean?
I like it. Yeah. Floating voter, why not? Yeah. Hand in every poll box, I don't know. That sounds more of a euphemism than I meant. But I think that's the key word, is use. Like, I don't want to feel like I'm being used for that part of who I am. But absolutely, if people can feel more comfortable around me talking about sexuality and not knowing where they fit, then that feels like a superpower. That feels like the good side of it.
Yeah.
And I definitely have had it where people have had these kind of conversations and they're like, oh, I'd not thought of that as an option, that I don't have to pick a label. And I think whilst it's not a you know, the identity for everyone, it does mean there's certain things that maybe as society, us having more comfortability with vagueness and less expectation that everyone has to have a label, I think that might help with certain things. Like, if someone comes out as one sexuality and then they realize that's not the full picture and they end up with a different label, you know, they can sometimes have that backlash of like, you deceived us, as if it's like other people's problem. And and to a degree, I guess that exists for everyone, because the assumed identity is straight when you're born, and then you're betraying this set of expectations that are put on you, which is really weird when you think about it. Like, you know, maybe your parents think, oh, when my little baby grows up, they're going to fuck somebody of this gender. Is it just me? It's like, the more you think about it, the weirder it sounds, like how we can project so much of like life expectations onto such small kids, or even before they're born. And it's like some kind of betrayal of the imagined life you might have had for them.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and then when you grow up, the kind of, because obviously we have become a more accepting society, and I've had a really charmed life with my sexuality. I've never really kind of experienced directed homophobia. Obviously there's sort of this kind of atmospheric seeing comments online and all that sort of stuff, but no one's kind of been directly aggressively homophobic towards me. But you know, that part of the way we've kind of landed at this is a sort of acceptance and an understanding of, like, so you're straight. It's like, okay, some people aren't straight. And then, so we're at this point where homosexuality is quite widely accepted. And then more recently, I suppose people have understood, oh, you can like both genders. So bisexuality, people are kind of just understanding that. And then as we're breaking it down further, we're realizing it's like, nothing really fits so neatly into boxes. Lots of different sort of sexualities people like to make fun of online, like pansexuality or demisexuality. But it's just like, it's because those three labels will never suit everyone. Yeah, I hope in 20, 30 years time, or even sooner if possible, we will be much more accepting and open to sort of vagueness and just individual experience.
Love it. Yeah, points to that call to action. Great. I think we are heading in the right direction. You know, it is nice to see. I sometimes look up like the years when same-sex marriage was legalized in various countries, and I think even when your ear is to the ground on this stuff, you can forget how recent a lot of the progress is.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the fact that conversion therapy is still legal in the UK at the time of recording.
Oh, could you imagine if they make it illegal next week before we get this out? That would be great. Please, government, prove us wrong.
Yeah, that's one of the few times I'd like to say something wrong and incorrectly on a podcast.
Yeah, let's will it into existence. One last thing I want to ask you about was having caught, I'll admit, most of, but not all of, one of your recent Zoom shows. You used a phrase that I've not heard before, which was entry-level gay. So can you share what that is? And is that a you term? Is that a everyone term?
I think it's a thing that people would recognise. I've never heard it before. That's sort of kind of like a personal observation that people have described me in a roundabout way as a starter gay, because I'm not necessarily camp or gay clubbing, and that sort of scene isn't really my scene. So because I'm not so...
You're not so fitting to people's extreme stereotypes.
Exactly. Because I'm not fitting into an extreme stereotype, people sometimes see me as sort of like a gateway gay, that you can kind of use me as somebody who likes football and is just a softly spoken, polite person. And it's just like, well, they're an acceptable level of gay because they're not in your face about it. Yeah, it's so strange. I mean, obviously, I'm the benefiter of this kind of bigotry. I'm viewed as an acceptable, I'm doing air quotes for the sake of the audio, acceptable gay, but I don't like that at all. And also, it's just massively unfair on, I know, my life and my worth isn't more because I'm not as entrenched in gay culture. That's absolutely ridiculous. I feel for people that are more stereotypically sort of presenting as gay, who will, that's probably part of the reason why I've not experienced that much directed homophobia. Then they will get much more hate and hard times for it. It's just so stupid.
Yeah. And do you feel like because some people view you in that way, there's kind of a pressure to almost keep that, I don't know what the word is, reputation?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I've been guilty of doing it myself. Like, if there's a boy, and there is a boy fancy at the moment, do you find yourself thinking like, oh, well, you know, I'm not like, maybe, because I don't know what his sexuality is. So I do think like, well, I'm, you know, I'm not like gay. So maybe he'll be won over to me. But that's just like a sort of a new type of internalized homophobia speaking.
Which is a funny kind of construct as well. Like, what does that mean? Like, you still are looking to have relations with a man in this situation, but it's like, oh, but, you know, only a little bit, not me. Oh, yeah. I'm coy. Like, he'd have to ask me first.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I was guilty of a lot of what I'm speaking about, as much as I try and sound sort of authoritative and knowledgeable, and above all of it, I 100% fall into all the traps.
But I think it's good to acknowledge, right? And I'm sure a lot of the people that you've received this kind of attention from may be going through a similar thing of trying to decide how okay it is to be gay and what version of gayness, I guess, you know, what version of these stereotypes they feel comfortable with, which is kind of horrible for me to hear about, because it's not actually your problem, or at least it shouldn't be. You know, this is stereotypes yeah. that are reductive and don't really represent, you know, it's a societal problem where there still is a lot of homophobia. And so that's what you're trying to duck and weave, whereas actually, like, you're already great, so there's no problem.
Yeah, thank you. That's a very good point. And I think it is important to talk about these issues, because people who are more skeptical or kind of mildly homophobic, or they wouldn't even call themselves homophobic, is that sort of level of perception, as somebody who is viewed as a middle class, white, air quotes again, sensible gay, they'll perhaps be more open to hearing about these issues from me than they would actually actively seeking out gay culture. So yeah, I do think it's important for me to say something.
So you're going to win them all over, and then I think, you know, just show up on Drag Race and really fuck with your fan.
Exactly. Win them all over with polite sensibility, then strip to my pants and do a pole dance.
All right. So on that fun note, we'll start wrapping up with our rules of the game. So have you got something in mind on a possible thing to live by in dating or relationships?
Yeah. Don't feel pressured to live to anyone else's expectations. Just because somebody may want somebody who is more into one type of thing or the other type of thing, or they don't want to date a bi person, or for whatever reason, or just like, don't bend to other people. Just be yourself. Trust that the right person will be found eventually, and don't lie about liking seafood.
I love that. And also, I think that's a really good one for people to consider, because often when you draw down on some of the, you know, ideals or maybe even preferences you have, there can be stuff that you've internalized from other people, that it's other people's negativity, it's other people's discriminatory attitudes, that you've internalized some of that, and that's why you're keeping away from a particular group.
Yeah.
You know, whilst it's not necessarily ideal, I can understand more when people have had a certain set of bad experiences and they think, okay, maybe people like that aren't right for me. If they're, you know, if they've only ever had exes who have brown hair and were horrible to them, I could understand you being a bit wary of people with brown hair, you know. Still something to work through, but I can understand it, versus, you know, you have these kind of things of not that group of people, or not something more important than hair color.
Yeah.
That you don't know where it comes from. I think it's worth trying to figure out where that comes from.
Yeah, quite frankly, we just don't live long enough as humans to unpick all of the trauma and biases and everything that we pick up along the way. It'll take too long. That's too negative a note to end on. But I just think true living is something that, as cliche as it sounds, is the best policy.
True living, sure. And you've given me a good segue to talk about a rule of the game I've been thinking about for a while, and I often talk to my friends about, which is examining the people that you most commonly attract, because often there are similarities between them. And when I say this, I mean like the people that are primarily pursuing you. Right. Not the people that you're primarily kind of seeking out. There does tend to be some kind of trends that can come up, and they don't necessarily make for the right choices for you. So he'll know who he is, but I'm going to be vague enough that no one else will know. A friend of mine has had a lot of experience where people meet him through his work and are attracted to him, I believe partly because of that, because he's great at his job and it's a cool job in the arts, which is impressive and fascinating and distinct. Mm. The catch of that is it creates a lot of complication when you're dating people in a community where everyone can kind of know each other and there can be like power structures at play. Maybe, you know, that's similar to stuff that happens in comedy where, you know, you can attract a certain amount of people that love your comedy, but how do you draw the lines of, are they interested in you versus your act, maybe at times?
Yeah.
And so that's something I always try and encourage friends of mine to look at when I see these trends. And I try and look out for myself, because sometimes I find that particularly I can have that where people are attracted to my work and my projects and my outlook and the voice I have through podcasting or whatever else, and get this idea, this narrow idea of who I am. Mm. And then they can be a bit disappointed that I'm more complicated than the sort of the version of myself that, that is publicly available. And that doesn't feel great to receive. And just because those people are maybe popping up more and chasing me down doesn't necessarily mean they're good choices.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Thinking about the context in which somebody comes to you, because you change in so many different contexts. And is the arena they've seen you in really your true self, or even the self you most keep up with?
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Yeah. All right, so we will wrap up there. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you.
If people want to find your work, where should they go?
My Twitter's, Instagram, TikTok are at StandUpAndrew, and my website is StandUpAndrew.com.
Mm-hmm. Because confusingly, there seem to be quite a few other Andrew Whites.
Yeah, so there's two promoters, I think, called Andrew White who run comedy. Then there's a comedian called Andy White. But I am equity registered stand-up comedian, Andrew White.
Brilliant, love it. All right, we'll wrap up there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more content, including extended ad-free episodes, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Murta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday.